Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell, and I also have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. I am a columnist with MS News Today at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Let me invite you to join our MS forums. We have over 1,000 active members discussing common themes and sharing their experience on living with multiple sclerosis. Please consider joining. You can find the link to the MS News Today forums in this episode's description. Hello and welcome to the Multiple Sclerosis News Today podcast. I have the distinct pleasure and honor of having John Strum with me today. John Strum is the host of the podcast Real Talk MS. He also has a very special affiliation with our MS community. Welcome, John.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you today.
Thank you for joining us. And I really can't emphasize enough. This is a very special individual, one I had the pleasure of meeting in person, and his kind eyes disarmed me immediately. And I knew this was someone very special to our community. John, could you let our audience know what introduced you to the MS community? And after that, how your podcast came to fruition?
Sure. Well, how I was introduced to the MS community. I think that's an introduction that no one ever asks for, but happens far too often, I'm afraid. I became a part of the MS community when my wife Jean was diagnosed with progressive MS in 1997. At the time she was diagnosed, she was an avid cyclist. She'd wake up 4 o'clock in the morning every day to go out and ride 40 miles before her day started. She was an avid hiker, very involved in physical activity. And unfortunately, within a very short period of time, her case was particularly aggressive. She went from that person to someone who was wheelchair bound within about three and a half years to someone who was bed bound in about 5 years. I actually stopped working for just about 11 years to service a primary caregiver. I unfortunately had a front row seat experiencing every way that multiple sclerosis impacts not just an individual, but a family. And I started my podcast because about five years ago, I was named as one of three non-scientist members of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
What an honor.
It was a pretty big deal, and it completely changed my perception of what was going on in the realm of MS research, and really motivated me to want to share some of that information. And that's what started the podcast. I would go into the Scientific Steering Committee meetings with some of the most brilliant neurologists in the world sitting at those meetings. And I'd hear about remarkable research that was going on. And I found out I was coming out of those meetings feeling very hopeful. And that's not a common emotion that people who are affected by progressive MS get to feel, right? So yeah. I realized it was great that I was feeling hopeful, but I was the only one from North America sitting in that room at that time. And I thought, gee, I need to find a way to share some of this information. And podcasting came to mind. This was about a little more than three and a half years ago. 177 episodes ago, believe it or not.
Who's counting?
Right? So I really started it because I thought there was so much encouraging news that either people weren't hearing, or when they heard it, it was wrapped up in so much scientific jargon that they really couldn't appreciate what was being communicated. And I thought, if I could kind of translate that into easy to understand English, and I could maybe interview some of the folks responsible for that research, I think it would be a great way to bring the MS community and the MS research community closer together. And that's what I try to do every week.
Well, and I can truly attest to your being quite successful at that as someone who, even prior to being here at MS News, has been able to listen to, because you're able to examine news and relevant information the MS community has going on, but you're able to put it in layman's terms for everyone to be able to understand and then appreciate practical application, which I think can be so hard today to bridge that gap.
It's challenging, but I think it is so important for different reasons. On the one hand, as I said, I think that there's a lot of reason to feel encouraged if you're someone who's affected by MS. And I want to make sure you're connected to some of what I consider to be pretty compelling reasons. But there's another reason as well. You know, we hear so much in the scientific community about wanting to elevate the voice of the patient, the voice of the caregiver. And that's great, but you want to make sure if someone wants to put a spotlight on your point of view, that you have enough information to make that voice count, so that your perspective really does make a difference in terms of research and clinical practice. It's great to put the patient at the center, but it requires an informed patient to really make that work. And so I try to do my small part to help inform people, to give them information that they can take back and talk with their neurologists about, or even talk amongst their own family about.
Well, so well said. In addition to what I see you doing with, particularly in your wife's case, being diagnosed with an already secondary progressive multiple sclerosis is not terribly heard of or common insofar as what we read about in the everyday diagnoses of MS.
So, you know, once you get your MS diagnosis, what's the first thing everybody tries to do? They try to figure out when it really started. All of a sudden, some of those random things that may have popped up in the past, well, now you have a little more context and you try to put that timeline together. And of course, we did that too. So it's not that my wife Jean didn't have a relapsing remitting phase, but we were quickly able to determine that her first MS event happened, 18 years before she was diagnosed. It happened when she was in college, and it was optic neuritis, which we all know is a telltale sign. It came, it went. And as a college student, she didn't do much about it. She had a life to live, right?
Right.
Well, the next MS event didn't occur for another 8 years. And the one after that occurred 6 years later, and they were never the same. So you have three incidents that are a little weird, but 8 or 6 years apart, you don't even remember, and you certainly don't think that there could be a connection. So she never made the connection. She never saw a doctor for any of this. One day she came off of a trip she was on, a business trip she was on, and she felt kind of dizzy for a couple of days. And she just assumed it might've been jet lag. Well, maybe it was more than that. And so it's not that she didn't have a relapsing remitting MS, but it was so disconnected from one set of symptoms to another by so many years that fortunately for her, she never had to deal with it. Unfortunately, when it did transition to secondary progressive, everything that happened after that was considerably faster and far, far more profound in terms of the disabling symptoms she ultimately developed.
Yeah, you bring up such an excellent point too with how we do often at diagnosis immediately fall into hindsight. What could we have identified? What could we have done? So often is the case. We do tend to push things aside if they are happening in a way that we have a busy life, we have a job, we have children, we have things we want to do in our lives. And truly, there is no fault. This disease sometimes just does what it wants, or all the time. And it is up to us to do what we can with the information that we have at the present time.
Right.
How, as a caretaker, you mentioned you had a front row seat, probably one of the front row seats you never wanted in life. Yet how in seeing her struggle up close, how did this impact you as not only her husband, but just you as a person?
Watching my wife struggle as her disease course continued was the single most difficult thing I've ever had to face. It's something I would not wish upon anyone. Another reason I'm so involved in things like the Progressive MS Alliance is because I hope that the work being done might ensure that maybe other families won't have to go through everything we did. But getting back to your question, it impacted me in a profound way, in every way you could imagine. It impacted me certainly emotionally. And yet at the same time, as I saw Jean struggling to the degree that she was, I did my best to make sure that I put a very positive face on things for her benefit. I kind of see caregivers as kind of like a weather front. You know, you have the person who's living with MS sitting in a room, and you come in maybe to give them meds, maybe to do something else, maybe to just assist them in a different way. And it's kind of like a weather front blowing through. If you're in good spirits, they're going to be more likely to be in good spirits. If you're not having a good day, I just think their day gets a lot worse. So as much as it was affecting me, I kind of had to put most of that on hold so that I could be there for her and be the best version of myself that she needed.
And how were you able to then address your own needs, autonomous of that of absolutely being the best husband that you could be? Because that is a duality I think is very hard for people to hold.
I agree. And I can readily agree because I failed miserably at it. I like to tell people that I learned an awful lot about how to be a good caregiver by first making every possible mistake. And I readily own up to that. So I didn't do a very good job when it came to self-care. I didn't remember to put on my own oxygen mask before I assisted the person next to me with theirs, right?
And
it's something that every single person who's ever flown on an airplane hears. And yet I didn't apply it very well, at least when I was at home. So short answer to your question, I didn't do a good job of that at all.
And I think what that does too, it also more in more ways than we can even imagine, that does affect both of you. When you can't be the best how strong and how you want to be for her, you have to be strong in meeting your own needs too. And that can be very difficult. There probably aren't enough hours in the day.
Well, I never found them.
If you do, can you let me know? Because I'd probably pass them on to my own husband who would like to know that secret. Have you seen in your experience when she was first diagnosed, when Jean was first diagnosed, and when you were then introduced to more of the progressive nature of the disease, what did you find out that surprised you most about multiple sclerosis? Well, I think that's a loaded question, but what pertaining to the progressive nature surprised you most?
Honestly, in Jean's case, it was the number of disabling symptoms and the speed at which they came at her. And I heard regularly from her neurologist that they had rarely seen a case that had progressed as rapidly. So I saw that was something that probably is not quite universal. And I'm glad for that, but that's something I experienced. I think the other thing that really stuck with me beyond the physically disabling symptoms was seeing how it crushed her psyche over time. Mm-hmm. And she really dealt with very deep depression as she continued to progress. We know that, although I didn't know it at the time, we know that about half the people living with multiple sclerosis at some point are diagnosed with clinical depression. I would venture a guess that the percentage goes up perceptibly when you're talking about the number of people who are living with progressive multiple sclerosis. The challenges can sometimes be profound and affect every part of life beyond your physical self. So for me, I think that the eye opener, unfortunately, was seeing how it affected her emotionally.
And that had to be a very painful thing, and also very helpless in some ways. I know that with my own husband, I do experience depression as well. And it's a very personal, very abstract journey that can change from day to day. And it can be quite the dance. Or
You're right.
of all the things to say, a dance, a scoot, whatever it would be for me, it might be any day it looks different, right?
True.
But I think that one of the things I did first when I went to your podcast, actually, I remember this, even though I was not listening to the first podcast on the first day, I did go listen to that first one that you did, because it really separated itself from all the others, and that we got a better look into what brought you to podcasting, and I would like to say what made you one of my favorite ones to listen to.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Jen. That first episode, and for the benefit of your listeners who probably haven't heard it, in the first episode of the podcast, I basically devoted it to talking about why I'm doing a podcast. I tell a lot of the story that we're talking about today. And I thought it was important to get that out. I think that I sometimes wonder now whether someone who discovers a podcast today doesn't necessarily go back and look for episode number one, where, as I said, we're at like episode 177. So I don't quite know how to give people that same context so they understand where I'm from. I've done that once. It's out there. Hopefully they find it. And it's fairly easy to find if they visit the website. If they go to realtalkms.com, then click on past episodes and they're all in order. You can easily go to episode number one. But without me telling you that you can do that, I don't know that everybody finds it quite so easily.
No, I encourage people to do that. And we will have a link to John's podcast in our feature as well. So we will do that in our explanation of your website and who you are. And we will have a link to your podcast. So I really encourage people to go ahead and listen to that number one, as it explains a lot about why we have you on the forefront, deciphering all this information that we so need. In your journey with Gene, and I will bring to people that I did meet John for the second time in February of 2020 at a convention in West Palm Beach, ACTRIMS. And I mentioned to John, it's so nice to see you. How is your wife? And he let me know she had passed away a week before. And yet here he was standing in front of me at this conference, seeking knowledge. John, I'll never forget that moment.
You know what? I remember it as clearly as you do. I think I remember that conference for all kinds of reasons. Obviously, the timing. I thought about whether I should attend or not. And you know what? At that point, Gene did not need me any longer. And so I thought the alternative was to sit at home and just let my mind take over. And that's always a dangerous place to be. So I thought I'd be much better off being with people like you instead of isolating alone. Now, what we didn't know at that time is we were within about 3 weeks of the whole world shutting down. And so the other reason that sticks in my mind is it's the last conference I attended, the last MS conference I attended prior to the pandemic kind of taking over our lives. And as the months have gone by, I've looked at my calendar and just kind of looked wistfully at the various events that I'm not attending. And it's not that they're not being held virtually, so we're getting great information, but I do miss being with people. I'm glad I could be with others, you and others, especially during the conference you're talking about now in last February.
I'm glad too, John. And it brings to mind that being truly the precipice of the world falling on its side, so to speak, with the pandemic, as you bring up, and COVID-19, and how we've all lived in a very different reality. What have you witnessed specifically, or there have been many things, but what calls to you that have changed in the world of MS since COVID-19? I mean, other than us all hiding inside right now.
a couple of things I noticed. First, I noticed when research came to a screeching halt. The cutting-edge research here in the U.S. is, and elsewhere, is being done at university laboratories. And as universities closed down, those labs closed down. I'm happy to report that for a time now, they have reopened. So
thank goodness, because we need them. We need them.
We do. So we're past that. But I noticed when research froze, and that was a little disconcerting to me. I guess the other thing I noticed from a clinical practice point of view, and it could be the one silver lining we take from the pandemic, it's been the immediate widespread use of telemedicine. Mm-hmm. I think that really becomes a game changer for people with MS and other chronic illnesses for a lot of reasons. I mean, I know from personal experience, it can be difficult simply getting to an appointment. So if you can achieve the same outcomes without having to leave home, I think that's a real win. The other thing that I noticed is that it extends really great MS specialists into communities where there aren't any. So rural communities, underserved communities can have access to phenomenal neurologists through telemedicine. Now, obviously, you can't do everything in a telehealth appointment that you can do in person, but you can do so much of it that maybe those in-person appointments don't have to happen as often. And the rest of the time, it's far easier to connect with the doc. So I think that's a win.
I agree with you. Telemedicine, it's accessibility, and the accessibility for you to obtain information, not only about your own health, but be able to participate in informational seminars or things pertaining to our disease has become far more achievable and user-friendly for the average person on the other end of the keyboard, whereas they might not have been able to participate before. And right. I think that's very, very beneficial. And as things move forward, we can only hope that this will be a trend that will continue to flourish, as I believe accessibility is instrumental for the ability for everybody with multiple sclerosis and other diseases to better their own and others' health experience.
I've talked to clinicians who talk about the fact that prior to our lockdown, when people had to show up at those appointments, there was a fairly significant cancellation rate. Cancellation can occur because, you know, you wake up that day and it's just a little more challenging for you to get out of bed than it was the day before. Or you wake up that day and the person you were counting on for that ride, if you need one, maybe they got otherwise occupied. Lots of reasons. But the point is, there was always a certain percentage of cancellations, right? Well, those don't happen anymore, which means people are getting the care they need. And to me, that's the most important thing.
I agree. And as someone with MS, in whose presents itself every day is a little bit differently. As today, you can tell my speech is a little wonky. Thank you, dysphagia. But in other areas, it might be my mobility is a little bit off. This accessibility has made the difference between being able to keep appointments that truly change the trajectory of my care. And for that, I am grateful. I can speak to that. As we wrap up here, John, and again, I'm smiling. I wish you could see me, but I'm smiling just because you're just a huge blessing to not only the community, myself, and our listeners, but to the world. And I am really grateful to have you on our planet. But what message would you like to share with our listeners, if any, that you had to pick from? I'll leave it to you.
Well, first, I'll thank you for those very, very kind words, Jen. I'm glad we can't see each other right now because you'd see me turn a bright purple. I'm blushing. So
purple's good.
I think the message I'd like to share is it's never a good time to have MS. But if you have to have it, now is not such a bad time. There is more encouraging work on the horizon that is going to allow people to regain lost function. It's going to allow people to, we are so close to being able to predict when someone may be diagnosed with MS sometime in the future before they ever have even a single symptom. And the reason that becomes important is now they can be started on a high efficacy disease modifying therapy. So at the end of the day, they never experience MS symptoms ever. Now, that's not a cure, but it allows you to live with MS as if it were a cure. And I think that sounded like science fiction when I first heard it, and it's not. So I think that there are so many encouraging things happening today that allow us, that give us permission to be a little more hopeful about what tomorrow is going to look like for people and families who are affected by MS.
I can't think of a better message to leave our listeners with is the message that there is hope always, in all ways. And taking up the mantle of our healthcare in any way that we can facilitate that hope and create other possibilities where others have been lost. And I would like to thank you, John, for joining us today. And listeners, please check out John's podcast at Real Talk MS and head to realtalkms.com or head to the App Store for his app. And John, thank you so much. We really are grateful for your joining us.
Oh, thanks, Jen. It was really my pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you and have a wonderful day. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening to the Multiple Sclerosis News Today podcast for up-to-date news and information, in addition to patient columns and community forums. Please check out multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Share your thoughts on this episode through social media. You can find MS News Today on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us to keep updated on the latest news and to never miss new content and initiatives. Click the links in this episode's description.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com.